Blog Talk Radio.
This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, on Saturday, March the 16th. It's always a great pleasure when we chat with our friend Barry Castleman, also known as the Prairie Editor. So let me say hello to Barry. How are you, Barry?
I'm fine, thank you.
It's always a great pleasure to have you, especially as we enter another political season, and by coincidence, another baseball season. We can talk about that on another time, but I find, Barry, you're such a great guest to talk about this because you've seen a lot of these campaigns, and I will tell you that I've never seen a campaign like this, so unique, where it can go in so many different directions, it seems like. We now have, for the first time since 1892, an incumbent running against his predecessor. I mean, this is a very different election, Barry. So what is your reaction to all of this?
Well, I think you're absolutely right. We're in many respects in uncharted territory. Even the fact that we have a former president running, which is so unusual, is not even necessarily the most unusual aspect, because we also have a very controversial, what they call lawfare campaign, directed against former President Trump by the Democrats and the Biden administration, using the Department of Justice and other agents to try and criminalize his behavior, to allege that his behavior as president was criminal. I think that we had also an attempt to exclude President Trump from some state ballots on a very specious charge that the U.S. Supreme Court unanimously rejected, and which would have been, of course, a catastrophe for the system, because that would have basically destroyed the presidential election system if it had been allowed to go further. So we have these very unique attempts, controversial attempts, to prevent even the voters from making an open choice for president, being directed by the Democratic Party. And then we have the unique, somewhat unique situation where the incumbent running for re-election is historically unpopular. And even by a majority of his own party's voters, we prefer someone else. And they also, both parties did this, by the way, but mostly it was the Democratic Party which enforced it, prevented anyone serious running against the incumbent. In the case of Republican Party, there were very serious candidates who ran, but because of so much very unfair activity being directed at President Trump, It revived his campaign. It revived support for him outside his natural base. And a lot of so-called anti-Trump Republicans, seeing what was happening, ended up supporting Trump and continue to support him that would not have supported him under other circumstances. But meanwhile, the Democratic Party literally took draconian steps to make sure that no serious candidate ran against President Biden, and the few that did were marginalized. And so, but very early in the primary season, both parties' nominees were determined. I mean, both Joe Biden and Donald Trump now have enough committed delegates to be nominated. So it's over. This produces, of course, a very interesting situation that isn't unprecedented, but maybe usual in the way it's done this time,
right,
for the rise of third-party candidates, some of whom may have been presidential candidates for their parties, who now to run as a third-party candidate. We know when voters are unhappy, there are significant third-party candidates. And we've had, beginning with Ross Perot and 30 or 40 years ago, and a series of third-party candidates who have obtained substantial votes. And in the case of the 2000 election, it was determined by a third-party candidate who got only a very small number of votes, but because of the election turning on one state, Florida, he made the difference. Because I think without that candidate, Al Gore would have been elected president. So we're in a very, very unusual circumstance, and which the very limits constitutional and historical limits of presidential campaigning are being tested.
Right.
And we,
No, I was just going to say, I'm trying to remember the gentleman's name that you're talking about in Florida. Ralph Nader, that's who it was. Ralph Nader was the one in, was the one in Florida who got enough votes, like you say, to make a difference. But there's also, Barry, a couple of other things that make this election different, at least compared to others. Number one, you have the president under investigation, although I think that he is coming out ahead in most of those, because most Americans, I believe, are not looking at those investigations as being judicial. I think many of them are seeing them as being partisan and political, and that's helping the president or President Trump. But the other factor is the whole question of Mr. Biden or President Biden and his physical appearance. I mean, I'm not a doctor. I'm not a psychiatrist. But when I see him in public, Barry, I'm concerned about wondering if this man can serve a second term, Barry.
Well, Biden has two problems. One problem is, of course, what you mentioned, is his age and his manner. And there's very little doubt, and I, who knew Biden on a personal basis in the 1980s when he was in his so-called prime, can tell you for sure that he is not the person or even the public figure he was. But the second problem is that he is himself now surrounded with very serious allegations of criminal activity, most of it, involving his family, and also prior to when he became president. I don't think there's any so much of a problem since he's been president, but when he was vice president. And he has been, I mean, there's enormous amount. They've even got Mr. Trump has labeled it the Biden crime family, because it involves not only his son, but his brother and others in the family. Now, these are allegations.
Yes. Right, of course.
They've repeated, and there's quite a bit of investigation, especially in the House, which is controlled by the Republicans. And this has now created a whole different dimension of attitude about the president, who is certainly not without his own skeletons here. So we have a very clouded presidential campaign in which the negatives about both the candidates far exceed any of the positives they're trying to put forward.
Right. Good point. Now, let me ask you, before we conclude our first segment, let me ask you to talk a little bit about the possibility of the third party. You mentioned that before. I don't think that the third party or any of the third party candidates, whether it's Robert Kennedy or West or any of the others, can win a state. But I do think they could be a problem for, I think, more Mr. Biden in some states. So you could have a let's say, a Robert Kennedy getting 15% of the vote and giving, let's say, President Trump a state or two that he would not have won without Robert Kennedy. Do you agree with me on that?
Well, the polling is showing, if we take the polling seriously, and we must take it with a grain of salt, that when the identical poll is asked between the two candidates, and then a second poll with all the candidates that are likely to be third-party candidates, we see that in most states, but not all, the advantage is 2 to 3 points for Mr. Trump. Now, there's a couple of states where it actually helps Biden. But the fact is that Robert F. Kennedy Jr. candidacy is a real problem. Actually, the reason it isn't a more serious problem for Mr. Biden is that because Kennedy Jr. is appealing to a lot of Republicans, especially the never Trumpers. So he's actually taking some Republican votes as well. But you have some candidates on the left who definitely hurt on a net basis Biden. And then you have, of course, the constitutional party nominee and the Libertarian Party nominee who will hurt Mr. Trump on a net basis. We have to see, however, just who ends up being the nominees. The bigger the name, especially on the so-called No Labels Party, which is going to be already on the ballot in a number of key states, could be become a problem. Now, we need to remember the 1948 presidential election when the favorite was Dewey, the Republican, and the Democrat, a man who had become president on the death of Franklin Roosevelt, was opposed on his left and his right. And on his right was the Southern Democrat Strom Thurmond, who ran as a third party candidate, and on his left was FDR's vice president, Henry Wallace, who was a fellow traveler of Russia. Turns out would have been a very dangerous man to be president. And they each got in excess of 1 million votes. In fact, Strom Thurmond carried a number of southern states he won and won those electoral votes. Nevertheless, Harry Truman still won the presidency. So
right.
It's a very interesting situation. But third, on the other hand, we've seen candidates do get 15% in an election, and in more recent times, we're essentially still a two-party system, and as you pointed out, the third-party candidate isn't going to win presidency.
Yeah.
But could be determine who does win.
Right. Yeah, it could be like you were saying before, the example of Ralph Nader in 2000 in Florida, or the example of maybe for me at least, being here in Texas, the example of Ross Perot in 1992. He didn't carry a single state, but he did get, I think he did take a lot of votes away from then President Bush. So that's, we will see. But I think Kennedy is creating some excitement. And whether that translates into votes or not, well, we will see. But if there has ever been a year where a third party, I believe, could do well, it's 2024. That's my feeling. I think there is a window here for another candidate, whether one will surface and take advantage of that, only time will tell, Barry. I don't know. But it seems to me that the political arena is right now perfect for a third party to have some influence, Barry.
Yes.
So we will see. Well, we're going to take a little break, and then after the break, we're going to look at some of the senatorial contests, and there are quite a few. Quite a few coming up. So we'll be right back. Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, talking today with one of our favorite people, Barry Castleman, the Prairie editor. And we were talking about the 2024 election, and now we're going to talk about another important part of that election, which is the U.S. Senate. And we always like to do this with Barry because he keeps up with many of these races across the country. So, Barry, the U.S. Senate, I guess we can begin by flipping West Virginia, because Senator Manchin is not running for re-election, so that's kind of an easy call. But where do you see some of the other races, Barry?
Well, at the beginning of the cycle, it appeared there would be 8 Democrats incumbents, or their seats would be competitive, and only one, your home state of Texas, being vulnerable on the Republican side. I agree with you. Well, of course, anything can happen, but it does appear to me Ted Cruz, he won't win by a lot, but it looks like, as he has done in the past, he will win, especially in a year that favors Republicans. So that brings us to the fact that there are now 10 vulnerable seats on the Democratic side. And if you count the latest development, which probably isn't going to be possible, but is now much more competitive, California, there are 11 incumbent Democratic seats that at least the Democrats have to take very seriously and spend a lot of money on. And I'm just going to take a quick moment to talk about California. That was supposed to be a slam dunk for the Democrats because they have what they call a jungle primary, and it was expected that only Democrats would run in November. In that so-called jungle primary, both party candidates run on the same time, and the two top candidates, which can be from the same party, are on the ballot. And it was expected that it would be Adam Schiff and one of two women, both congresswomen, Democrats, to his left, who would be one of his opponents. But Schiff played a little, and he spent a lot of money, which he had, to enhance the one Republican candidate who was not expected to be a finalist, Steve Garvey, who was a former baseball pitcher and a sort of legendary figure in Southern California. And it actually worked. And so the two finalists, and Garvey actually won both there were two primaries, one to fulfill the seat of Dianne Feinstein for 2 months from election date of January, and the other for a six-year term. Surprisingly, Garvey won both. He was actually behind one of them on election night, but as the votes, they still haven't, only tallied 90% of the votes, but Garvey has pulled ahead in the one, and he's way ahead, several hundred thousand votes in the other. Now, he's still only in the 30 percentile. So the experts are saying it doesn't make any difference because the votes of the other candidates were mostly Democrats. And in a two-person race, Cruz will actually cruise. However, it's not that simple because Garvey has unusual appeal beyond just being the Republican nominee. He's a baseball legend. And, of course, as you know, Ronald Reagan, Arnold Schwarzenegger, and other celebrities do well in California, much better than any other state, which is, of course, sort of a celebrity state. So although Schiff does probably win, except in remarkable circumstances, he has to take it seriously. And one of the women to his left is so mad at Schiff for playing the game that she hasn't even conceded yet. And
this is Porter, right? This is Porter, right? Lady Porter, or Bob Riley, one of the two.
It's Porter. And the other interesting aspect, because Schiff did this, because he advertised over $30 million on behalf of Garvey, he brought out the Republican vote. And he caused a number of safe Democratic House seats to become vulnerable. And almost for sure, it will cost the Democrats at least two or three House seats in California that they wouldn't have lost. So everyone's mad at Schiff.
Yes, I was going to say one quick thing, Barry, if I may interrupt you for just a second, please. I just wanted to say that Steve Garvey was the first baseman for the Dodgers and the 1974 National League MVP, one of my all-time favorite players. He's not in the Hall of Fame, but he's pretty close to it, and he was that kind of player, not quite a Hall of Famer, but a very good player, Steve Garvey. Anyway, I just wanted to get that in because he is one of my favorite players. So,
all right,
go back to what you were saying, please.
So then, two other states. Remember, I told you 8 states originally considered vulnerable, but now 10. What happened? Well, in Maryland, a very blue state, overwhelmingly went Democratic in the presidential election. Mr. Hogan, former Governor Hogan, a moderate Republican, decided to run. And that suddenly puts Maryland, and he's leading in the polls. And he's refusing to endorse Trump, and Trump is also staying out of it. So Hogan has a real shot at winning a seat. It was considered impossible. And then in New Mexico, of all places, the incumbent was Martin Henricks, not a particularly well-known senator, but popular enough in New Mexico, considered a shoo-in. But Nella Domenici, the daughter of Pete Domenici, a once very popular Republican senator from New Mexico, entered the race. Now, we have no polls, but she's also a self-funder. She has a lot of wherewithal. That race is going to be a serious race no matter what. She may not win, but she could. And then we have 3 races in the late breaking that have gone to help the Republicans. Meanwhile, the other 8 are going also very well for the Republicans. As you point out, one is already virtually decided. That's West Virginia. Montana, well, one of the things that's taking place is the Republican senatorial chair, who is from Montana, has been very effective, much more so than the senator from Florida who ran the 2022 Senate campaigns. It turned out to be a dud. This cycle, he has endorsed, this is the senator from Montana, he has endorsed Trump. And more than that, he has engaged Trump, avoid what he did in 2022. So instead of Trump getting and interfering or endorsing weak candidates and weak senatorial candidates in certain states, he's not doing that. In fact, the only state which he has really gotten himself involved with is Ohio, which we'll talk about in a minute, because that's coming up on Tuesday. Other than that, the senatorial committee has recruited top candidate in almost every race. And the Republican prospects are very good. Arizona, of course, will be very competitive. The incumbent, Kyrsten Sinema, has decided not to run. She's the Democrat who became an independent. And Kerry Lake, who's a bit controversial, but nevertheless very well known, is the likely nominee against Ruben Gallego, a sort of left-leaning congressman. And the polls are are polls showing Gallego ahead and polls showing Lake ahead, but definitely a pickup possibility. And in Nevada, once again, a purple state, the incumbent is not strong, and there's a Republican is named Scott Brown, a wounded war veteran who is a very, very attractive candidate. He's running a very strong campaign, and there's a very strong possibility that not only will Trump carry Nevada, but the Republican nominee for the Senate will win. That would be a pickup. Pennsylvania was very close last time. And as you recall, Dr. Oz won the primary by the narrowest margins over David McCormick. And many people feel McCormick would have won that race. Well, McCormick is back, this time without an opponent, and he will be the nominee. And he's running against a Pennsylvania well-known incumbent, Bob Casey. But, and Casey's father was governor, and he has been elected twice already. But Pennsylvania is turning from a purple state into a red state because President Biden's and his administration and their energy policies have turned off a lot of working class voters, especially in western Pennsylvania, which is, by the way, where McCormick is from. So McCormick, in the latest poll, is only 4 points behind, and Casey is well under 50%. So that's a possible pickup. Coming back to Ohio, that will, the Republicans had three strong nominees, all of which were leading the incumbent Sherrod Brown in the polls. Now, Sherrod Brown, like John Tester in Montana, is the unusual case of a Democrat winning Senate seats in states that are considered very Republican, which Trump carried by significant. And they have done that in several elections. But this is the election that both of them, Tester in Montana and Sherrod Brown in Ohio, may have met their final match. Now, of the three Republicans in Ohio, two have emerged as sort of the finalists. One is being supported by the governor and the former Senator Portman, and the other is being supported, and the other Senator, J.D. Vance. And the polls are showing it's a seesaw. Every poll has one or the other up ahead. So it's going to be very close, worth watching on Tuesday night. But whoever wins that primary has a very good shot at defeating Brown. And in fact, one of the candidates, Larry Hogan, I believe the Secretary of, I don't know if he's the Secretary of State, he is actually leading in a matchup with Brown. He is ahead. So Ohio is a very strong pickup possibility.
Let me, if I may, Barry, just say something very quickly about Ohio. Brown has obviously been successful in Ohio, but I think Ohio, during Senator Brown's term, meaning the last 6 years, has become a lot more Republican than it used to be when he first won. And would you say that's probably the reason that he's more vulnerable? I mean, Montana was always Republican, and Tester was able to get through somehow. But Brown is running in a totally different Ohio than the Ohio that he ran in 2018 or 2012, Barry.
I think that's a good point you're making. I think that's a very good point. I think that, by the way, I also want to point out, there's another state, even though it's not a pickup, it's an actual net plus for conservatives, and that's the state of Utah, where Mitt Romney, who had been the senator, decided to retire. Now, Romney, right, like Murkowski in Alaska, has been a sort of undependable vote for Republicans. Mm-hmm. They vote for the leadership position, and they vote most of the time. But often, they, because they are what they're called rhinos, Republicans in name only, more moderate, and they vote with the Democrats. While the person who succeeds Romney will be much more conservative,
right,
even though that's not a pickup in party labels, it's a definite for conservatives.
Right.
And
no, that's a good point. That's a good point because, you know, look, I voted for Mitt Romney in 2012, and Mitt Romney was always a favorite of mine, but I don't know what's happened to him. I think it's all personal, if I could say so, between Romney and Trump. And but, I mean, Romney was very reliable and, you know. But let me ask you a question about Ohio, if I may, just going back to Ohio. If President Trump were to put, let's say, J.D. Vance as vice president, wouldn't that help? Wouldn't that help winning that seat in Ohio for whoever is nominated, Barry?
Yes, I don't think that Vance is likely to be the vice presidential nominee. I haven't heard his name even being mentioned, actually. Although you're right,
I have, but maybe I. I was reading the wrong thing, but there was some talk of him being, because of his military record and because of his youth and because he's conservative. But anyway, maybe I exaggerated the importance of J.D. Vance, but I had heard that there.
Well, if he were, I mean, it would clearly help.
Mm-hmm.
The problem
okay.
Republicans have in Ohio is, although the state is Republican, the governor, Mike DeWine, and Mr. former Senator Portman are more moderate figures. So there's really a kind of a schism there. I think on Election Day, Republican voters unite, but there are tensions, shall we say.
Yeah.
And
no, that's true. That's very true about Ohio. You're exactly right about that. Barry, are there any other states? I think we've gone through quite a few because we're kind of running out of time. I want to make sure we get to any other state that you have there on your list.
Well, I'm trying to think here. I think I covered.
I think you did, I think you did. I was following it myself, you know.
Oh, I didn't. There are two states I didn't. So
okay.
There's two very important states. Wisconsin and Michigan.
Yes, yes.
Now, in Michigan, the Republican candidate will probably be Mike Rogers, a former congressman.
Mm-hmm.
And the Democrat, it's an open seat because Debbie Stabenow is retiring. And a congresswoman is running on the Democratic side. Michigan is definitely a battleground state, slightly favoring Democrats in the past, but definitely could go this time, especially with the controversy over the state of Israel, which you have a very large pro-Palestinian vote in Detroit area, which expressed its dissatisfaction with President Biden in the primary, which could continue to be a problem. So Michigan is definitely a possibility. Mike Rogers could be. And then in Wisconsin, the incumbent Tammy Baldwin is running, but Wisconsin is a purple state. Now, she doesn't have a number one stop, probably going to be Eric Hovde, who is a businessman and who can self-fund, which is an advantage, especially these days. But Wisconsin does have a Democratic governor, but has several Republican congressmen. And the latest polling shows Wisconsin, Trump carrying Wisconsin.
Interesting.
Almost all, in fact, he is carrying all the real battleground states against all of them states carried by Biden, which is why, in terms of the Electoral College, the 2024 election, if it continues in this direction, could become a landslide in the Electoral College, because he would win all those states. The polling is saying he has a good chance to win all or many of the states that Biden carried in 2020.
Right. The other thing I wanted to mention about Michigan, too, Barry, President Biden is having a problem there with the automobile workers because of these electric vehicles and these mandates that apparently are not very popular, as I understand, with the automobile workers because, you know, the electric cars are not selling like they thought they would. So that's something, too, that I've picked up in Michigan that could work for the benefit of the Republicans there as well, Barry.
Well, yes. The phenomenon is nationwide. You have the labor leaders and their union treasuries strongly supporting Biden and the Democrats, but you have the rank-and-file members increasingly voting Republican. It began with Ronald Reagan, and it certainly came to the fore in 2016 and helped Donald Trump become elected.
Right.
And although
that's exactly
didn't make the difference in 2020, it could again make the difference in 2024, because as you know, the Hispanic, Black, and Jewish voters, all of whom were strong Democratic voters in the past, are peeling off and are turning to the Republican Party in 2024. All the polls and the actual primary voting is demonstrated.
Right. No, you're right. And that is something that I want to talk to you more about the next time, because there's no doubt that this should be scaring the Democrats. And I will say one last thing before we go, and I'm basing it more on Texas than I am the other states because I'm more familiar here. During the Texas primary, we had a very bad turnout from Democrats. I mean, just to give you some rough numbers, 2 million plus Republicans voted in the primary, and there weren't any contested seats. I mean, it wasn't like we had the big, you know, presidential primary or Senate primary. Frankly, there weren't any state seats. I mean, there were some districts, but that's, you know, usually smaller numbers. But then on the Democrat side, they did have a contested race for the Senate, but they got less than a million votes. All the Democrats in Texas were less than a million votes, whereas the Republicans were more than 2 million votes. So that tells me that at least in the primary, there wasn't a big turnout, Barry.
Well, you raise a very important point, because turnout is almost everything in election season these days. Republicans appear, I mean, we have the two nominees already determined, although I continue to believe that Joe Biden may resign, or rather retire, and make way for another candidate before the Republican, the Democratic convention. But the enthusiasm for Biden is almost non-existent. People support him. He's the incumbent. But most Democrats, or a certain, if not a majority, a plurality, wanted somebody else. Now, there were opponents to President Trump, but the base, the Republican base, which is Trump's base, is very enthusiastic, and they are turning out. So on the scale, I don't know what the number would be, but on the scale of enthusiasm, likely voters, the Republicans at the present time have, I think, a distinct advantage, and that is key to an election.
Right. No, that was certainly the case in Texas. I can tell you that just from my own experience down here. The turnout was almost two times more.
If what's true in Texas is true elsewhere, this election will be close.
Right. No, I agree. I agree with you. Well, Barry, as always, it is absolutely a delight to have you, and I know we're going to do it again over the next few months. I'd like to once again check the Senate and see how we're doing, check the turnout, and I want to talk to you at a later show more about these Hispanic and African-American figures that are very interesting. The electorate is changing, and I guess we'll get a better sense as we get closer to the election, but as always, you've been absolutely wonderful and informative as always. And thank you so much for being a part of it, Barry. I hope you have a great day.
Thank you. Always, the pleasure is mine.
All right, my friend Barry Castleman, the Prairie editor up in the Midwest. Always enjoy chatting with him and always enjoy endorsing the Prairie editor, his website. It's an absolutely wonderful place to get information and to get that. You know, he doesn't just tell you who's going to win and who's going to lose. He really gets into a lot of the background of all of this, and that's absolutely great. Thank you for listening. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas.